Remember who else might have known you were going to visit Father Conn?
I took your call when I was at the gym.
The gym? Could anyone have overheard you?
Sure. There were lots of people around. Mike O'Brien even gave me his pen to write with.
Mike O'Brien?
Yes, Lottie, and a whole bunch of other people. Don't jump to conclusions just because you don't like him because of his dandruff.
Lottie's stomach stirred. Maybe it was the pizza, or maybe, just maybe, Father Joe was in the clear. Where did that leave Mike O'Brien?
I'll have to find out where O'Brien went after the gym, she said.
Wish I was there to help you.
Me too, Lottie said, and hung up.
Maria Lynch came up behind her.
Here's the information on Derek Hart.
Lottie began to read. She noticed his date of birth, 1975. Something clicked in her brain.
I need to see the copies of the Rome Ledger records.
She sucked in her lips, looking at the picture of Derek Hart, his personal details printed underneath. Lynch spread out the pages. Lottie hadn't time to analyse them since getting back from Rome, and now she ran her fingers down the entries and stopped at one. The reference number. She raised her head.
What is it?
Lynch asked.
I'm not sure.
Lottie checked the date of birth on the file again.
Does that mean what I think it means?
Asked Lynch, looking over Lottie's shoulder. I don't know what it means, Lottie said, and closed her eyes.
Chapter 96.
Looking up, Lottie was surprised to see Jane Dore standing in the office.
Hi, Jane. Anything wrong?
Lottie frowned. Why was the state pathologist visiting the station?
I finished at the railway. I thought you might like to know.
Thanks, Lottie said, still not understanding why Jane was here.
I did a quick preliminary examination of the body at the scene. There's no tattoo on the inside thigh that I could see. The body is in a bad state, so I'll know for sure when I do the autopsy.
What? Lottie sat up straight. She racked her brain trying to recall if O'Malley told her he had the tattoo. She was sure he did. I thought it might have been Patrick O'Malley.
Whoever it is, my guess is he succumbed to hypothermia, Jane said. Though I don't normally do guesses.
Lottie laughed tiredly. Jane smiled and handed Lottie her phone.
What's that?
Lottie asked, squinting at the dark image. It was a photograph.
This was in the vicinity of the body.
I can't make it out.
Wait a minute. I'll email it to you,
Jane said, and sent the photo from her phone.
The body was in an area used by a number of vagrants. Sleeping bags, crates, cardboard, plastic bottles, you name it. Socko's found this inside a sleeping bag. I thought it might be important enough for you to see it straight away.
Lottie clicked her email, bringing up the attachment. Handwriting. She read the words, and they bolted through her.
Is it relevant to the recent murders?
Jane asked, placing a hand on Lottie's shoulder. I'm not sure. It might concern an old crime, Lottie said. In an effort to prevent further questions and to shake off Jane's hand, she asked, Would you like a coffee?
I better get back to the dead house. It's filling up faster than Tesco on Christmas Eve.
Lottie tried a smile. It didn't work.
You're exhausted, Jane said.
Long day. Lottie printed the picture. When she looked up, Jane was gone. Kirby and Lynch were watching her.
What does it say?
Lynch asked. Lottie picked up the page from the printer and read. Dear Inspector, the red-haired boy killed with the belt was called Fitzy. You need to find Brian. The words trailed off as if the nib had broken or the author no longer had the will to write. The page smudged and crimpled, pencil strokes shaky. Removing the old file from her drawer, Lottie slid the note under the photograph of the boy.
He had been missing for almost 40 years, but was still smiling in his school shirt. She ran her finger over the freckled nose, then closed the folder. Was he Fitzy, the boy murdered in St. Angeles? Dear God, she hoped not, because then it would be too personal. She wondered if Sean was home yet. Tried his number again. No answer. I'm going to kill you, Sean Parker, Lottie said to the phone in her hand. And still nothing on Jason Ricard's whereabouts either. She had to find Patrick O'Malley. They found Derek Hart first. Chapter 97. Uniform Gardaí brought Hart to the station, an hour and a half after the 6 o'clock news aired. Moroni's television news report stirred the public and a stream of phone calls resulted in locating Hart almost by accident. Lottie and Kirby sat in the warm, sticky interview room. Hart had agreed to the recordings and waived his right to a solicitor. Mr. Hart, at 7:13 this evening, 6th of January, you were apprehended attempting to gain access to a property belonging to the late James Brown. Can you inform us as to your reasons and intentions in doing so? Lottie sat across the table, eyeing Hart. It was difficult to conceal her loathing, as she recalled the heinous crime for which he had spent 5 years behind bars. Abduction and abuse of a minor. His smug face added a hint of insult. He rubbed his hands incessantly. She wanted to slap him, to make him stop. Instead, she fingered a pill out of the pack in her jeans pocket and slipped it into her mouth. She needed to maintain control of her emotions and locate Jason Ricard and find out what her son was up to. She shifted uneasily. She should have asked Lynch to carry out the interview with Kirby. Too late now. Hart remained silent, breathing through flared nostrils, short, sharp bursts, a sly sneer flushing his cheeks. I haven't time for this, Lottie said, crashing her chair back against the wall. She leaned across the table, grabbed him by the shirt, pulled him towards her. Kirby jumped up, ready to intervene. Hart's mouth curled into an ugly snarl. She saw then the reality of his personality, as his facade faded, revealing a cruel and sadistic pervert. The real Derek Hart. Tightening her hold, she shoved her knuckles against his throat until his face reddened. She didn't care if it was being recorded. He was scum. This is brutality, Hart spluttered, his first word since he was apprehended. Maybe I might get that solicitor. Lottie drove her hand deeper against his Adam's apple, wanting to do damage, to leave her mark. If Boyd was here, he'd have pulled her back already, and they'd have laughed over it later. Giving Hart one last shake, she thrust him back into his chair. She'd have paced if there'd been enough room. Kirby was in the way. No option but to pick up her chair and sit down. Where is the boy? She asked through gritted teeth. The urge to choke him was overwhelming. Concentrate. Boy? I don't know what you're talking about, he sneered. You like young boys, teenagers. Lottie slid Jason Ricard's photographs across the table. He glanced down, then quickly looked up at Lottie. I don't know him. Why do I not believe you? Lottie took back the photograph. The posters in James Brown's house, did you put them up? No comment. Why did you wrangle your way into his life? None of your business. It is my business. I could arrest you for murder. Arrest away? You've no evidence. Hart tapped his index finger on the table, gritting his teeth. Because I didn't do it. Brown was a deviation from your normal prey, wasn't he? Not a ripe young child. Why did you go for an older man? Had he something you wanted? Money? Information? You're talking pure shite. I haven't a clue what you're on about. Hart folded his arms. Why the charade about being a teacher? I never said that. Lottie thought back to her earlier interview with him. He could be right. She had misinterpreted what he initially told them.
Tell me then, why were you attempting to break into Brown's house tonight? Lottie asked, changing the subject rapidly.
I wasn't breaking in, I was going in. I knew where the key was, only it wasn't there. I tried the back door and window. I forgot you lot would have taken the key and switched on the alarm.
Lottie studied him. He looked so different from the man who'd feigned grief. She was furious with herself for falling for his ruse. She'd thought he was genuine. So much for her intuition and gut instinct.
Losing your touch, Parker, she chided herself.
Now you've an opportunity to put the record straight, she said.
If you don't mind, Inspector, I'm saying nothing until I get a solicitor.
Mr. Hart, the least I can charge you with is obstructing our inquiries, and I will. This is your last chance.
Lottie read a range of emotions crossing Hart's face, like rolling isobars on a weather chart. His body sank into the chair as he appeared to reach a decision.
Okay, what's in it for me?
Talk to me, and I'll know what I'm dealing with.
Can I have a coffee first?
Lottie wanted to say no, but the truth was, she needed to get away from the self-righteous Hart, if only for a few moments.
Right, she said. Interview suspended. She switched off the recording equipment. It got under her skin and it itched worse than a mosquito bite. She sought air. Pulling the cellophane from the pack, Lottie extracted a cigarette with numb fingers. Leaning against the newsagent's window, she flicked a lighter and inhaled. Hart's words swirled around her brain. The awning over the shop sagged in the middle with accumulated snow. Traffic crawled up and down the street and she idly counted the red ones. Snow fell in thick clumps. A group of boys, hoodies shrouding their faces, lounged at the corner of a laneway across the road, drinking from cans. An occasional yahoo emanated from their huddle and Lottie thought of Sean. She looked at her phone. Still no contact. She rang Chloe.
No, he's not home, Chloe said. Katie's driving me mad.
Don't mind her. Try Niall again and Sean's other friends.
What other friends?
Just do it, Chloe. This was unlike Sean. A knot of fear gathered in the pit of Lottie's gut, but she felt somehow detached.
How could she be this calm when her own son might be missing?
The pill she'd just taken, or because she wanted to believe he was all right?
Of course he was.
Shaking herself out of her musings, Lottie knew there was something rotten in her town. There had been for a long time. St. Angela's, with his walled-in secrets, was at the core of it. The tattoos, the records, Father Conn, Patrick O'Malley, Susan and James, even Derek Hart. St. Angela's was the den of iniquity. Pulling up her hood, she caught a glimpse of her face in a shop window. A ghost-like apparition peered back at her. As quickly as she could, she headed to the station. Hart was her next target. She was ready for him. Pacing, one step one way, then the other, Lottie had to be doing something or she would hit him.
So, Mr. Hart, what have you to tell us?
Right so, he said. You better not charge me with anything. I don't want to go back to jail. She waited without replying. She wasn't going to promise the bastard anything.
I suppose I better tell you what I know, he said.
Lottie nodded at Kirby to be sure everything was being recorded. I got a call from a priest in Rome, Father Angelotti.
She hadn't been expecting that.
She sat. He said he had information for me. Talking all about me being adopted and my birth mother wanting to meet me. His eyes flitted around the room.
Go on, she said.
I knew I was adopted, but I hadn't given it much thought. So when he contacted me, I was curious.
His eyes never stopped moving. You were in St. Angela's as a baby, Lottie stated. Earlier she'd seen his name on the Rome ledger. You want me to believe you are Susan Sullivan's son? Hard to believe, I know. I hardly believed it myself. That priest sounded convincing on the phone. Said he was coming to Ireland later in the year with the proof. How did he find you? He told me he'd had inquiries about a woman trying to find her child. From the date she gave him, he discovered the adoption records or something. That's what he said, anyway. Sounds fanciful to me, Lottie said, but she was thinking of the ledger copies on her desk. She stood up and paced again. I'm telling you what I know. I was in prison for 5 years, my name's been in the news, so it was probably easy enough to find a jailbird in this country, he smirked. Lottie cringed. Father Angelotti had been a better detective than she was. How had the school where Hart worked not checked him out? Someone would be in deep shit over that. And he told me her name. He was all apologies then. Said he shouldn't have said it. Did you meet with the priest? No, I didn't, Hart said, raising his head. The dancing eyes looked hollow. He told me he was coming to Ireland. Asked me if I was willing to meet with my birth mother. He wanted to know if I'd agree before he spoke to her. I didn't care one way or the other. So you met Father Angelotti? No, I never met him. Yet we found his body in James Brown's garden. Odd that, don't you think? I didn't meet the priest ever. I didn't kill him, so I can't explain it. Odd too, you shacking up with James Brown. Coincidence. I don't believe in such a thing, Lottie said. She considered Hart. He appeared to be weighing up his strategy. Okay, he said. When the priest first contacted me, he told me the inquiries were made by a James Brown on behalf of this woman. I did some research of my own. I found out this woman he mentioned, Susan Sullivan, worked in the council here in Ragmullen. I went online, saw where she worked, who she worked with. I googled a few of them and stumbled across James Brown on this dating site. That bit was true, and we really did like each other. I was sorry when I heard he was murdered. I don't believe that for a minute, Lottie said. So, why did you murder your lover? He laughed. I am many things, Inspector, but I am not a murderer. Did you try to contact Susan? No. I left that up to the priest. Lottie paced in front of him, fitting in two steps, fatigue eating into her joints. She eyed Kirby. This was getting them nowhere. Coincidences. All coincidences. I don't believe you, Kirby said, breaking his silence. I know I was in St. Angela's. I'm sure you can verify it, and I had no reason to kill anyone. The first part of his statement was true, Lottie knew. Why were you attempting to get into Brown's house this evening? Hart sucked in his jaws. Debating with himself? It better be the truth this time, Lottie thought. James kept money in his house, and Susan Sullivan kept money in her house. Lottie sat. What money? They were blackmailing someone. Don't ask me who, because James never told me. He let slip one night they got cash in hand as well as money into their accounts. Said no more, but told me not to be asking questions about it. Pull the other one, Lottie said. So where's this phantom cash? Not sure. In the house somewhere. Lottie eyeballed him. Okay, then, he relented. The suspended mirror over the bed. That's where the money is hidden. Lottie looked at Kirby. They'd missed it. What about Susan Sullivan's cash? You know where that is? You got it, didn't you? Lottie looked at him and wondered if he were the cause of her mugging. He dipped his eyes, avoiding her bruised face. Did you? Lottie reached across the table towards him. Hart squeezed back against the wall, his chair screeching on the tiled floor.
Easy, Inspector.
I couldn't get in. A guard was sitting in the squad car in front of the house.
I saw you coming out.
Followed you. Thought you might have the money. Lottie shot out of her chair. Hart jumped back against the wall. She jabbed her finger into his chest.
You bastard, she said.
Kirby grabbed her by the elbow. Didn't mean to hurt you as bad.
But sure you're okay.
How did you know about my children?
Guessed,
he said. Wanted to scare you. Get you thinking the mugger might be the murderer.
Guess what I'm thinking right this minute?
Lottie shouted, pounding his chest.
I didn't kill you and I didn't kill anyone.
Lottie sat down. And when Hart resumed his seat, she stretched out and grabbed his hand, twisting it round until he groaned.
You're a little prick, she said.
Whatever you say, Inspector, he said, his arrogance restored. He eyed the camera in the corner of the ceiling. Lottie dropped his hand. Kirby fidgeted, and she knew he was itching to kick the shit out of Hart too. But if he was telling the truth, that left someone else out there who was the murderer. But why should she believe him?
Jason Rickard, Lottie said. Where is he?
I don't know any Jason Rickard, he insisted. Lottie sighed heavily, and leaving Hart alone with his conceited eyes, she switched off the recorder and followed Kirby out.
Chapter 98.
In the incident room, Lottie, Kirby and Lynch looked at the photographs on the board. Arrest him for breaking and entering, for mugging and robbery. Anything else we can charge him with?
Come on, guys, help me out here.
We've no evidence Hart killed anyone, so if it's not him, who's the murderer?
Kirby said. And where is Jason Rickard? Was he abducted? If so, why? And where is Sean? She wondered. He better be home by now. Ignoring the icicles freezing her spine, Lottie walked away from the board and rummaged through the ledger copies, scanning through the names and dates without really seeing them. Tried to recall O'Malley's story. Could he be their prime suspect? There was a murder in St. Angela's years ago, she added, and my theory is someone is killing the witnesses. That's the only conclusion I can come to. But what has Jason Rickard got to do with it? And Father Angelotti, where does he fit in?
Just got uniforms report here. They've talked to all the taxi drivers. Not one of them has a record of going to Brown's house on Christmas Eve, Kirby said.
He couldn't have walked that far, Lottie said. Not in that weather. So someone drove him there.
The killer?
Kirby suggested. Possibly. More than likely, Lottie said. Lynch peered over her shoulder.
Why is this all happening now?
We need to talk to Bishop Connor again.
Another lying bastard. Lottie picked up her bag.
And we've to see Mike O'Brien.
Boyd said he was in the gym when he took my call about Father Conn.
Conspiracy theories now? Kirby asked.
And I need jump leads for my car.
I'll look after it.
First, I want to see where this latest body was found.
She put the old manila folder in her bag.
Any word from Sean? Lynch asked.
Lottie stopped at the door.
What time is it?
8:42-ish? She tried not to panic.
Kirby, this is Sean's phone number. Can you get our tech guys to see if they can locate where he is via the GPS?
Sure, Inspector, straight away.
I'm trying hard not to worry, Lottie said, but this is totally out of character for Sean. I better go look for him now.
Don't fret, Lynch said. I'll get the traffic cops to keep watch out for him. We'll find him. Do you have a list of his friends?
Lottie said. Chloe already tried them, but contact them again. Chloe will have numbers. She fought back tears of anxiety. We need to track down where Mike O'Brien might be at this hour of the night.
Her phone rang. Father Joe.
Not now, she said, and hung up abruptly. Maybe I should stay here in case Sean comes looking for me.
If he does, I'll contact you immediately, Lynch said.
Okay, Lotta relented. I'll keep myself busy.
But where was her son?
Her chest constricted with fear and exhaustion threatened to overwhelm her. She searched her bag for a pill and remembered she had taken one a little while ago. She saw the silver pendant in her bag, plucked it out and flung it on the desk.
What's that? Kirby asked.
Tom Ricard's alibi, Lottie said. Hurry up, Kirby. We've things to do.
Chapter 99
Jim McGlynn and his Socco team were still at the scene in one of the roofless terraced houses by the train station. Lottie scanned the area under the glare of the temporary lights. No sign of any other life except the Soccos working like ants, quickly and efficiently. She left them at it, and entered one of the old carriages to her left, and switched on her flashlight.
He has to be somewhere, she said, upturning empty sleeping bags, a stench rising with the material in her hands.
He's not here, Kirby said,
standing well away from Lottie's frenzied search. Lottie heard a shout.
Are you looking for me?
She turned, dropped the matted strip of cloth that had come away from a damp cardboard box. Patrick O'Malley. Standing outside the crime scene tape, his hands deep in his pockets. He looked a lot cleaner than when she'd last seen him.
Where have you been?
She demanded, walking toward him. She couldn't visualize him as a murderer, but evidence was suggesting otherwise.
Trying to knit my unravelled life back together, he said.
Ducking under the tape, Lottie grasped him by the elbow and steered him up the hill to the car. She was anxious to get away from the oppressive air of deprivation emanating from the old wooden railway carriages. It clawed at the back of her throat. A small hump of movement caught the corner of her eye, and she hurried her steps, thinking of the vermin who had feasted on the faceless man who'd sought nothing more than shelter. O'Malley leaned against the car door.
Sit in out of the cold, Lottie said, and followed him into the back seat.
Kirby sat up front, chewing his cigar and watching in the rearview mirror. O'Malley was clean-shaven, his clothes fresh. Gone was the scent of sickly unkemptness.
Where have you been? She asked again.
The hostel on St. Patrick Street, he said. They took me in.
Why did you not go to them before now?
She twisted around to look at him.
I never bothered. Just drifted along, but after Susan and James, I felt different.
He paused.
Inspector, I owe it to them to pick up the pieces of my life and begin again.
Mr. O'Malley, I ought to bring you to the station for questioning.
Grant so. I've nothing to hide.
Lottie considered him. His face seemed naked of any fear or guilt. The note, she began, found in the sleeping bag. You wrote it?
Ah, yes, you could say that, he said. I started it, didn't finish it. I decided to get myself together. Never came back for my stuff. Not that there was anything worth getting.
So why are you here now?
I heard earlier this evening that a body was found. I only came up to see what the commotion was all about. I think it's old Trevor over there. Frozen to death, the poor Aegis.
Tell me what you were writing, she insisted.
Things started to come back to me. After we talked at the station, like. Thought I was going to be next. I didn't want to die, so I picked myself up. Brushed myself down and told myself I wasn't going without a fight. Just like young Fitzy.
Lottie took the old file from her bag and showed him the photograph of the missing boy.
Might this be Fitzy?
O'Malley tore at his chin, scratching.
I'm not sure, Inspector. It was a long time ago.
But you think it could be,
He studied the boy's face for a few more seconds.
Like I said, I'm not sure.
The murder you described. Can you think when it took place? What year?
I can't remember much. Too many bottles of wine since then, but like I told you before, we called it the Night of the Black Moon. 75 or maybe 76. It was after Christmas, so it might have been January.
Black Moon, Lottie said.
When there's two new moons in the month, Kirby piped up from the front seat. When evil stalks the earth, O'Malley said.
Lottie felt an icicle slither along her spine. Mr. O'Malley, you baffle me. Did you kill Susan and James, Father Conn even?
I'm shocked. Totally shocked that you could even think such a thing of me.
But then again, who am I? I'm only a nobody to you.
That's not an answer, Kirby said.
Lottie shrugged. It's obvious to me that everything connects to St. Angela's. You too. You knew Susan and James and Father Conn back then. Now they're dead and you're the last man standing. Don't forget Brian.
What about him?
We tried to find out about him, but it's possible he changed his name. He might even be dead. Can you tell me anything about him?
You haven't seen him from that day to this.
Lottie recalled Mrs. Murta's recent revelations.
Mr. O'Malley,
Patrick, have you ever met Bishop Connor? His laugh broke up in a fit of coughing.
What's funny?
Lottie asked.
Me? Me? You think I'd know a bishop? I'm a down and out, a homeless nobody. What would I be doing with the bishop?
I take it that's a no.
For sure, he said.
And what, Mr. O'Malley? Lottie snapped. She was caught up in the riddles and he was wearing out her patience.
You do your job, Inspector, he said. Just do your job and leave me out of it.
Mike O'Brien is next on my list. Lottie watched O'Malley walk sluggishly up the hill, away from the train station. She didn't think he had it in him to be a murderer. But he was a deeply wounded man with a scarred past. Anything was possible.
You're going to let O'Malley go, just like that? Kirby said.
I've nothing to hold him on, Lottie said. Plus, I don't think he has the strength to strangle a kitten, let alone three people. She checked in with Lynch while Kirby turned the car.
Shit, she said, finishing the call.
What?
He asked, switching the wipers on full. No sign of Sean. But they're contacting his friends again and also their parents. I need to find him.
Wait till they finish checking out his friends.
And Lynch can't locate O'Brien, Lottie said. He's not at home or at the gym. She followed O'Malley's progress. He crossed the canal bridge and disappeared under the yellow hue of the evening streetlights. He seemed smaller somehow, as if the weight that anchored him to an unstable ground all his life had suddenly become embedded in a mud bank. She doubted he would ever be cut free to sail with the wind at his back. She silently wished him luck. He would need it. So would she. Chapter 100. It was dark. Pitch black, his mother called it. Sean felt Jason's soft breaths against his shoulder. He was cramped, needed to piss badly, and had no idea how long it was since the man had left. Jason stirred.
You awake? Sean asked.
Yeah, what's going on?
Sean shifted and stood up, trying to loosen the rope from his wrists.
Who is that weirdo?
I'm not sure, but I've seen him before.
Oh, this is all so mad.
Jason remained slumped on the floor.
Come on, bud. You have to get moving or we won't be able to do anything.
What can we do? Nothing, that's what.
I'm not giving up that easily. We have to get out of here,
Not a hope,
Jason said. Sean twisted and turned. Eventually he loosened the rope and it fell away. He edged his way around the room in the darkness until his hand reached the knob of the door, twisted, pulled and pushed. It was steadfast. He moved further along, feeling the walls, found the second door, same result, and no windows. There had to be a way of escape. He felt deep inside his combat trousers and pulled out his knife. At least he had a weapon. I have a knife, he said.
What are you going to do with that? Kill yourself?
Don't be a shithead. Come on! Two heads are better than one. We have to think.
I've no energy to think.
Sean made his way over and kicked at Jason.
I can't do this without you. Do what?
Sean thought for a moment. There had to be something they could do. At least help me. You're the one with the brains.
I'm not so brainy to end up in this mess, Jason said.
Sean sat down on the cold floorboards and took out his phone. It was dead. He fingered the knife. Would he have the balls to stab the man? He wasn't so sure.
Please, think, he whispered. We need a plan.
Jason pulled himself into a sitting position, and Sean cut the ropes binding him.
Okay. At least we can go down fighting.
Sean passed the knife to Jason.
Swiss Army?
Jason asked, feeling one sleek blade. I've never had a chance to use it. Before now. Sean took back the knife and flicked out the various blades.
We could do some damage with this thing.
He opened the longest blade and slid home the others.
I'm with you, so, Jason said. We still need a plan.
Sitting in the silence, Sean slipped the weapon back in his pocket.
A war plan.
Chapter 101. Bishop Connor glanced at Mike O'Brien sitting on the edge of a gold, filigree-legged chair. O'Brien looked weary, eyes small and black. He, on the other hand, felt good.
Where is Ricard? He should be here.
He's not answering his phone, O'Brien said.
Planning permission is approved, the bishop said. Don kept his part of the bargain. Now we need to ensure Ricard keeps his.
I put my neck on the line for this.
Tom Ricard is a man of his word. You will get your money.
His bank balance is a mess.
Mike O'Brien raised his head.
What do you mean?
Bishop Connor jolted straight up.
I've been massaging the figures for months, sending bogus returns to head office. It was part of the agreement with Ricard. I don't know how much longer this can go on before they discover the manipulation, start asking awkward questions, and demanding repayment of his massive debt.
Bishop Connor shot him an angry look.
I need my money too. Why isn't he here? What can be more important at this stage of our plans?
O'Brien shrugged his shoulders.
How soon can Ricard's company start hauling down that monstrosity of a building?
Bishop Connor was anxious to be rid of the physical reminder that had caused him so much trouble over the years.
There's a waiting period for objections. A month or so, I think.
Could be longer.
What? Another month?
Bishop Connor's cheeks flared fluorescent red. He picked up a glass of water and swallowed it in one gulp.
That's the system, O'Brien said. And the building cannot be demolished. It's on some protected structures register.
You know what I mean.
It would be nice, though, to see it all crumpled into the ground.
It's difficult to bury secrets, isn't it?
O'Brien looked up from beneath heavy eyelids.
When that place is gone, all ill goes with it. And it will be a fantastic place when it's finished,
Bishop Connor said.
120 hotel rooms and an 18-hole golf course. Lifetime membership.
and St. Angela's history buried. Forever.
That's if he has the money to do it, O'Brien said.
I hope you're not serious.
Like I said, Ricard's company is sitting on a stack of loans. If even one bank calls in its share, the whole thing will collapse, and Ricard will be bankrupt.
Bishop Connor hit the redial button.
Ricard, we could do with you at this meeting. Things need explaining.
He then held the phone at arm's length, looking at it, his face curling into itself with anger.
He hung up on me.
I just want my money. O'Brien rose to leave.
Where are you going?
We are not finished yet, Bishop Connor said.
I think I am, O'Brien said. I honestly think I am.
Chapter 102. Tom Ricard disconnected the call as Melanie came down the stairs and placed a suitcase in the hall. He looked at his wife, silently questioning. Arms folded, she stood on their ridiculously expensive Italian marble floor and stared back at him.
Where are you going? He asked.
I'm going nowhere, Melanie hissed through closed lips, her makeup and clothes immaculate.
But, Mel, he began.
Don't you Mel me. I smell her, you know. Every time you come home from your soirees. Our son is missing, and I've had enough, Tom. Enough!
Ricard sighed, buttoned up his coat.
This is it so, he said.
You made your bed, so go lie with your dog.
But Jason, we have to find our son.
He gesticulated his arms about wildly.
You drove my baby away.
She pushed past him into the living room, the echo of her high heels deafening him. He looked around at all he'd worked for and saw emptiness. He'd lost everything. He picked up the suitcase and pulled the door behind him with a soft thud. He drove away, leaving his wife and life behind. He had to find his son. Mike O'Brien did not like the way the meeting had ended with the bishop. He drove erratically around Margamullen. Was he hoping to get arrested for dangerous driving? He didn't know. He didn't know who or what he was anymore. He was lost. More lost than ever before in his life, and that was saying something. Tom Ricard had ruined everything. But wasn't it his own fault, too? Being bullied by the bishop. He should have remained strong in the face of that adversary. But he knew he had never been strong. Weak and manipulated. That's what he was. The carbon beneath the diamond, according to Lottie fucking Parker. We'll see, he thought, shrugging resolve back into his bones. He parked outside the developer's house. All the windows blazed light out onto the snow, turning it yellow. What could he say to Ricard?
That he was sorry? For what he did? For what he was about to do?
No.
He was through with being sorry. He was going to stand up and be counted. It was time for him to come out from the shadows. Gunning the engine, he drove away. He would leave his mark. Bishop Terence Connor ran his fingers through his hair. The meeting confirmed what he already knew. Ricard was going to screw him. He marched from wall to wall, bare feet on plush carpet, leaving footprints in the deep pile. He had come too far to lose it all now. He wasn't about to let things slip away without a fight. There was too much at stake. St. Angela's owed him. He put on his socks and shoes, pulled on his coat. A cold edge deep within his bones told him it was going to be a long night. He warmed up the engine of his car before driving through his automatic gates and into the pelting snow. The four walls were starting to fall in on top of him.
Derek Hart clawed at his throat. Water. He needed water. He needed to get out of here. He'd already had 5 years in prison, and he didn't want to spend a minute longer in it. He'd said goodbye to that life. Metal crashed on metal. Doors opened and closed. Keys rattled in locks. Laughter and crying, shouting and screaming. His life was made up of bad choices. Starting with his bitch of a mother, whoever she might be. He hoped it was Susan Sullivan. Because she was dead, and he wouldn't have to look for her and kill her.
"Let me out of here!"
he screamed at the walls.
"Let me out, out, out!"
He curled into a ball on the floor and screeched at the injustice that was his shit of a life. Patrick O'Malley looked at the canal for a long time. The cold ice cracking in places, solid in others. The streetlights casting shadows and shapes through the falling snow. He craved a drink, just one, a sip, no more than that. 2 days without alcohol flooding his veins. And he felt worse than he'd ever felt. No, that wasn't true. The worst time of his life was the night of the Black Moon. He'd never known such terror as then. The memories flashed and dimmed. Fitzy screaming for his life. With his freckled nose and bright hair. Brave boy. A little hero. O'Malley could see the face clearly now, and a spark pricked at the back of his brain. He thought of the photo the inspector had shown him. Was it Fitzy? Was the boy in the photograph the same boy buried under the apple tree? He shook his head. He couldn't be certain, but thought it might be. Another image appeared on the shiny ice of the canal. Susan, James and himself looking out of the window as his little broken friend Fitzy was dumped in the clay. He closed his eyes. The memory flickered like a frame-by-frame movie. The men with their shovels, cracking the hard earth to make way for the young soul. He opened his eyes and the scene remained there, a vivid vision. Suddenly he could see the faces of the two men reflected in the ice, floating up from his subconscious. And the terror returned, stronger and more violent than before. He needed a drink. But first, he decided he would tell the detective lady everything he knew. Chapter 103. Lottie was talking on her phone. She walked up and down the steps of the Garda station. "I know, Chloe, I'm doing all I can," she said, clawing at her hair. Where was her son? "But Mother, Ma'am, please. You need to find him," Chloe cried. "He's my only brother." "He's my only son." Lottie choked down her panic. "I'll find him." She hung up and rang her mother to go sit with the girls. She was on the top step when she noticed Tom Ricard leaning against his car. "Is your son missing too?" Ricard walked over and looked up at her. "None of your business," Lottie replied, turning to go inside. He grabbed her sleeve, pulling her towards him. "Now you know what it feels like." Instinctively, Lottie drew out her other arm to hit him. He didn't flinch, but caught her wrist and shoved his face into hers. "Find my son," he said, and let her go. "I'll find him." "You do that, Inspector." He walked away, slowly and deliberately. The wind carried his voice. "You do that." She watched as he hauled himself into his car. She watched as he drove down the road. She watched until the red taillights disappeared in the distance. And a coldness clutched every sinew of her heart, descending over her entire being. She had felt the same chill the morning Adam died. Though that morning the sun was reaching high in the sky. Tonight the heavens were black,
and the ground frozen as another shower of snow fell softly to earth.
Inspector?
Lottie turned on the step to see Patrick O'Malley trudging along the icy footpath.
I've something to tell you, he said.
And he told her what had happened on the night of the Black Moon. Chapter 104. After parking his car at the rear of the chapel once again, he let himself in through the side door. He hoped the boys had slept. He had plans for them. He carried a plastic bag with crisps and soft drinks. Youngsters lived on trash. He beamed his torch along the corridor and shadows jumped back at him. Birds flapped angrily above his head, and he longed for the day when this place would be a heap of dusty rubble. He hoped the two boys would sate his appetite. Quickening his step, he relished his rising excitement. He unlocked the door and entered. The first blow caught him on the side of the head as he fell. He saw the glint of a knife flash before his face. Then darkness.
"What do we do now?"
Sean screeched. They dragged the stunned man into the room. Jason kicked the prone figure in the ribs with his bare foot.
"Shit, that hurt,"
he said, and limped away.
"Stop freaking out,"
Sean shouted, wondering just what type of a gobshite Katie had got herself involved with.
"We'll tie him up."
He pulled together the ropes that had bound them. As he tugged, he felt a blow to his abdomen and was hurled against the wall. He dropped the knife. Blinking rapidly, he saw the man rise up, swivel, and punch Jason under the chin. Jason fell unconscious to the floor. Sean cowered against the wall as the man hit him in the face, picked up the knife and staggered towards him. He thrust the weapon against Sean's throat.
"Smart arses."
He nicked Sean's skin with the blade.
"That's what you are. Little fucking smart arses."
The man lowered the knife quickly and sliced it at Sean's stomach. Then he kicked him hard in the same spot. Sean roared. Blood seeped through his clothes, down onto his jeans. His fingers found the wound. It wasn't deep, but he felt faint. He heard voices far away in the distance and struggled to keep his eyes open. White stars floated in front of him.
"I think it's time you and your imbecile friend entertained me."
The man wiped the knife against Sean's jeans, flicked it closed, and secreted it in his pocket.
"I will be back in a while."
He stood up, kicked Jason, then left the room, his soft footsteps echoing along the corridor. Pain inched through Sean's body. He gagged, and blood eased out of the corner of his mouth, the copper taste choking him. Tears flowed down his cheeks as he inched in the dark towards the plastic bag on the floor. He tore at it and pulled out a can. Snapping it open with trembling fingers, he drank, fueling energy into his throbbing body. He hauled off his hoodie, yelping with each movement, and held it tightly to his wound. It wasn't as deep as he'd first thought. Attempting to stem the flow of blood, he bunched the makeshift dressing inside his waistband, tying the sleeves around his hips. He continued to cry, loud, terrified sobs. No one was going to find them. They were going to die. He collapsed back onto the cold ground. Chapter 105.
"Can't you drive any faster?" Lottie asked.
Kirby floored the accelerator and skidded. He righted the car and clamped a cigar between his lips.
"We can't be sure he'll be there. From what O'Malley's told me, I think Jason's been kept there, and I know who abducted him."
"Bit of a leap of the imagination, isn't it?"
"If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Hurry up."
She was sure she knew who Brian was. He must have been tipped over the edge because of something to do with the development of St. Angeles. And he targeted Rickard by taking Jason,
She was still trying to figure it out when her phone rang. After a lot of wrangling with the service provider, we've triangulated Sean's phone GPS, Lynch said. And? Lottie gripped the edge of her seat. Please God, at least let Sean be all right. Well, it's a wide area. From the hospital to the cemetery and around the back of the town. About 4 square kilometres. See if you can get them to pin it down more. Thanks. Lottie hung up. He is grounded for life, she said, but she couldn't stop the dread in her voice. Could Brian have taken Sean too?
He's fine. Don't you be worrying. Probably off having a few cans with his friends, Kirby said.
He's only 13, but I'd take that at this moment, Lottie said.
That GPS area.
What, Kirby? Lottie twisted to look at him.
It includes St. Angela's.
Lottie opened her mouth to speak, but nothing came out. Had something awful happened to her son? Kirby, faster. And she started to cry, uncontrollable sobs breaking from her body. She'd lost Adam. She couldn't lose her son too. St. Angela's loomed up through the darkness. Kirby pulled up beside Lottie's abandoned car. She quickly studied the black windows, her eyes drawn toward the little chapel to the side of the main building. She recalled what O'Malley told her about the priest and the children and the candles and whips. Dear God. She blinked. Was that a light flashing in one of the windows? She sat up straight. A flash, then another. Someone walking with a flashlight. Look, Kirby, up there. Do you see a light? He was out of the car before her, heading for the steps. She jumped out and skidded on the ice, coming to a halt behind him.
Looks like someone with a torch, he said.
Come on. Lottie ran up the steps. She furiously felt in her pockets for the key, found it, and shoved it into the lock. As they entered the doom of St. Angela's, she felt all the sinister foreboding she supposed the young Sally Steins must have felt so many years before. The man was back, dressed in a long white robe. Sean would have laughed if he hadn't been convulsed in agony.
What are you doing? He groaned,
watching the man wrap a rope around Jason's waist, hauling him to his feet. Jason staggered, but remained standing, eyes like glass. Sean was dragged upright, his feet tearing on the floor. The rope was curled around his wrists and pulled tight. He was tied up behind Jason. Sean swayed with dizziness. He suddenly felt like a little boy. He wanted to be at home, playing his crap PlayStation. He didn't need a new one. He'd tell his mam. His old one would do just fine. Niall would fix it. He knew his friend could. Yeah, he'd ring him to come over with his toolkit, and together they'd make it work. He'd help out around the house. No complaining. Empty the dishwasher, hoover the floor, clean his room. He promised himself he'd do all those things just to get out and feel his mam's fingers running through his hair, holding him close. He wouldn't cry. No. But he did. Sean Parker cried and he didn't care.
Shut up, you wimp,
the man growled, and flicked the torch up and down the walls as he dragged the two boys behind him along the corridor.
Oh, no,
Jason muttered.
What?
Sean whispered through his sobs, each step shooting pain through his stomach.
Oh, no,
Jason began, his voice fading.
Oh, no, what? This time he killed me.
This time? Sean asked.
Was there another time?
It hurt to talk, but he wanted to know what Jason was talking about. Sean pulled him round and witnessed feral fear in the other boy's eyes, causing his own heart to miss a beat. The man chanted, a slow, menacing mantra, and led them in a procession down a stone staircase and into a small chapel.
A blaze of candles threw light out and upwards. Above the altar,